I'm delighted to welcome Tom Atkinson back to the studio. We're going to talk about two of his short stories tonight. The first is titled Grimace and the Burnt Black Hills, which originally appeared in the Sun magazine and was nominated for 2 pushcart prizes. It also won an Ohio Arts Council Individual Excellence Award, as well as the 2013 Ohio Arts Council Fine Arts Work Center Writer in Residency in Provincetown, Massachusetts. It's also been taught in English AP classes in 2 different California high schools, and it's just been selected from hundreds of submissions for the New Stories from the Midwest 2015 anthology. The second story is titled Grace in the Embers. It is in the Standing Deadwood short story collection and was just named one of 10 finalists for the 2015 Indiana Review Fiction Prize. Tom, it's great to see you.
It's great to be back.
Grimace and the Burnt Black Hills and Grace and the Embers are stories that are linked largely through characters. Correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the main characters is Paul. And I would love for you to read an excerpt from Grimace to start with, and then we'll talk about who Paul is.
This is Grimace and the Burnt Black Hills. Before heading into the store, I used the rearview mirror to draw on some eyebrows with the eyeliner pencil I shoplifted back in Ohio. I didn't need to shoplift it because I had a good job at Discount Tire working with Chief until not even 2 days ago. But it's hard enough looking like me without having to buy eyeliner from May, the big lesbian behind the counter at Dollar General, especially when your crazy mom is wandering the aisles yelling your name, and the way she calls Paul sounds just like a black crow cawing up in a dead tree. May's one of those lesbians that's big-boned and built like a man, and you can't help wondering if she was supposed to be a man all along until maybe her mom took a fright when she was pregnant. She and Gwen have something going on, and while that probably means something to May, it doesn't mean squat to Gwen. I got my flare hair off the passenger seat headrest. It was a joke present that Billy and Chief got me for my last birthday, a camouflage visor with spiky brown polyester hair sewn around the band, like something you'd buy your bald uncle for a laugh at Christmas. And Billy and Chief had a laugh when I put it on and wore it around the garage all day. But the thing was, the more I wore it, the more I didn't think it looked like fake polyester hair. And even if it did, fake hair was better than no hair, and if I adjusted it big and pulled it down low, it covered up a lot of territory. And you can even throw it right in the washing machine, as long as you remember to get it out and hang it up to dry, and don't throw it in the dryer on high heat like my mom did with the first one.
Why is Paul drawing on eyebrows and wearing flare hair, which is actually a cap with hair attached to it?
Right. Well, Paul, whose name in many of the stories in the collection is Grimace after the old character in the McDonald's commercial, was burnt up. He wasn't exactly cooking meth, but his uncle was cooking meth, and his uncles left Paul to stir the pot while he went off to the farm in Fleet to get some ingredients, and he got burned. So he's horribly disfigured. And so he... In one of the stories, it makes reference to the fact that he doesn't have enough nose or ears to hold up a pair of sunglasses. And so that's why he's sort of putting on a disguise before he goes out in public, out to the store that he's about to go into in the story.
And Grimace refers to...
In the old McDonald's commercials, there was a character called Grimace that was basically this big purple blob and didn't have any ears or nose. And one of his coworkers nicknamed him Grimace, and it was a name that stuck. So much so that many of the characters, even though they've grown up with him their whole lives, don't know that his name is actually Paul. Mm-hmm. And when someone mentions Paul, they don't know who they're talking about.
I find that your characters are so fully drawn. They really come alive. I feel I know them. I'm wondering where they come from in your life. You know, is this imagination or pieces of this person and that person you knew in your life? Where do they live for you?
It's really a combination. I mean, sometimes I will see people and then I will sort of reverse engineer a life for them, wondering how they got to where they got. And also just elements of how people think that I've known put into another body, if that makes sense.
You also have characters who are from an overlooked part of society, if that's a way to characterize it.
I think so. Absolutely. I had an agent tell me that nobody was interested in reading about poor people with problems. It seems like that excludes a lot of books that you had to read in high school. But I do think every person has dignity. And I think that that's part of what I'm trying to do with a lot of these stories is just show that a lot of these overlooked people have the same humanity and dignity as everyone else.
It seems to me also that another thing that is given a short shrift are short stories in the world of literature. Tell me if you agree or not, but novels certainly probably at the top, even poetry, are often genres that one sees more of. So what appealed about the short story form to you? And since these stories are all interconnected, was there some reason you chose that over the novel form?
Well, I think that they're interconnected was just sort of a happy accident. I would write a short story and there would be a character in it. Paul is a secondary character in a number of stories, and then he just started screaming out for his own story. And that's been one of my most successful stories to date. And also, I think the interconnectedness of small towns. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's related to everybody. Everybody knows everybody's business. But in terms of why I like short stories is I think it's really hard to do a short story well. A novel, you have the luxury of time, which you don't have with a short story. A short story, your audience has to buy in immediately. And if you are not successful at that, you're not successful at the short story. You sort of have to jump in with both feet and they have to be along for the ride. And if they're not, then you've not done your job.
Well, you do your job well. I want to ask you to read from the other short story we mentioned earlier, and it's called Grace and the Embers. But if you would set it up for us first, because Paul is also in this story, but from a different perspective.
Right. After the events of Grimace and the Burnt Black Hills, Paul and the woman that he's met out in South Dakota, Claire, come back to Ohio to sort of purge Paul's memory. And the character that they run into is Gwen's mother, who is Jerry or Miss Jerly. She runs the local beauty parlor. And that's the narrator of this story. And she appears in a lot of the stories. And she's another person that, as I went along, I said, okay, I have to write a story from her point of view. So that's what this is. And it's called Grace and the Embers. And in this particular scene, they're talking while they're cooking breakfast. Grace and the Embers. He rattled the half-full plastic barrel of cheese curls on the counter and said, "Where's Amber? Gwen Beck taking care of her?" I laughed and started pulling all the ingredients for biscuits out of the cabinet. "Hell, honey, you ain't been gone that long. Gwen can't take care of herself, much less my grandbaby." "No, Amber's just up at her aunt's outside of Akron for the weekend, Chief's sister. I'll meet them halfway come supper time and bring her home." He frowned down into the sink full of dirty dishes and said, "How is Chief?" "Paul used to work with my ex-son-in-law, Chief, on the service truck over at Discount Tire. Chief was crazy in love with Gwen and married her right out of high school. He treated her like a princess, and things were okay there for a few years. But Gwen was always looking to the next thing, especially after Amber popped out. A squallin' baby in dirty diapers weren't the princess's cup of tea. I know that feeling. When you're young and pretty, and think you haven't found everything the world might have to offer you. Then she found the drugs, and she ain't so young or pretty with the meth mouth and skinny arms scratched scabby from the crank bugs. And Chief, he went from crazy in love to just plain crazy, trying to stop that train wreck." I said, "Crazy as an outhouse rat, drinks too much, disappears down to West by God for days on end, still won't get a prosthetic. Paul disappeared last spring, right after Chief lost his hand. between a backhoe and a jack stand. I guess he made it as far as South Dakota. Seems like there was some question of who screwed up there, and Chief never really said. He flipped curling ham slices. I'm sorry. I was hoping. I finished working the lard into the flour before I said, Gwen's my only child, and I dearly love her, but I'm afraid there might be only one way that story ends.
And all too soon, our time ends. It's wonderful to see you. Thanks so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
I trust we'll see you again.
I hope so.
I've been talking with Tom Atkinson about two of his short stories. One is titled Grimace in the Burnt Black Hills, and the other, Grace in the Embers. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.